You would please take out your Bibles and turn with me to the book of Matthew in chapter 5. I've been giving myself the Joseph Cashmere challenge over the last few lessons and starting everything with something that Jesus said. Because I think and I believe firmly that what Jesus said, what Jesus did in his life should be the model and should be the basis for everything that we do and everything that we believe if we call ourselves Christians. We're going to start here in Matthew chapter 5, and we're going to begin in verse 14. All you little ones should know these verses very well. Verse 14, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand. And it gives light to all in the house. And in the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." What I want to do this morning is I want to ask a really simple question. And as simple questions tend to go, there's a lot of depth to this question, so don't just scratch the surface with the question. Really investigate it and dig into it. Do you let your light shine the way that Jesus talks about here? Do you let your light shine in the way that Jesus describes? Is there something in your life, is there something in your heart that would prevent you from letting your light shine, from being an example, from letting other people see the practice of your righteousness? Do people see you as a Christian? Do they know you as a Christian? Do you let your faith shine in your life and in this dark world that we live today? As I said, it's sort of a complicated question. Because I think a lot of times we go then after reading Matthew chapter 5 verse 14, we go to Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus would talk about not letting your left hand know what your right hand is doing in your acts of charity. How Jesus would say that when you pray, go into a closet, go into your room and shut the door so that no one can see your prayers. And I think sometimes we hold up this idea that we're not that comfortable with letting people see how we are in our light and in our example. Sometimes we shy away from and we allow the pendulum to swing too far to the other direction of hiding our light, as Jesus would warn us about here in Matthew chapter 5. And so that's the question really for you. And examine your own life. Think about the way that you live. Think about what you do. Do you hide your light? Or do you really let it shine like Jesus talks about here in Matthew chapter 5. And what I want to do this morning is I want to look at the life of Jesus. I want to look, as we talked about, him being our perfect example in everything, and how Jesus leaves us the perfect balance between these two ideas. Because while there were many times that Jesus let his light shine in a very public way, there were often times where sometimes he was a secret Savior. Sometimes in the life of Jesus, he did things behind the scenes. Sometimes in the life of Jesus, he would even go so far as to tell people, don't say anything about what you've just seen or about the faith that you've just professed. And we're going to talk about some of these examples this morning, but what I want us to do is I want us to see that Jesus leaves us the perfect example for what it means to truly be a light in the world. He finds the perfect balance in the seeming paradox between Matthew chapter 5 and Matthew chapter 6. And what we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at a few areas of Jesus' life. First, we're going to look at how he is a light in the world in the very ministry that he offered, in the teaching and his miracles, his acts of service and his acts of love, how he was a light in the world in his ministry. But that light looked very different than what it could have looked. And then we're going to talk about the way that Jesus was motivated to be a light in the world. What was the motive behind all of the things that Jesus did? What was the motivation for all the ways and all the times that Jesus would choose to publicly proclaim who he was and sometimes would choose to be quiet about the things that he did? And then we're going to look at the model that he leaves us. His example, his light, the model that he leaves us in his own life, the way that he modeled what it truly meant to be righteous before God in everything, and how he encourages us to be models today. And when we look at the life of Jesus, this is not an academic exercise. This is not us just knowing and filling our brains with facts and various passages. What I want us to do is really make the application to ourselves. If Jesus could do it, we must do it as well. If Jesus could be a light in the world in the ways that he was, we ought also to be encouraged to be those same kinds of light in the world that we live today. And so let's begin with the ministry of Jesus. As I said, Jesus' ministry was very different than what it could have been. You ever really stop and just think? Jesus, the Son of God, he could have demanded that every single person who came before him fall on their knees and bow before him. Could he not? He sure could have. But during his ministry looked so different than what it could have looked like. And in fact, it looked so different than the activities and the actions of the Pharisees and the scribes and all the religious leaders around him. He stands in stark contrast with them in the way that he allows his light to shine during his life and during his ministry. Because oftentimes, he was seen, but he was doing things in secret. And if you'll look with me over the book of Matthew in chapter 12, Matthew in chapter 12, Rick read one example of this morning during our reading, but we're going to look at another one here. And as I was going through recently and studying through the Gospels, I will say, and I was going to put up a list, but I didn't want to give you guys an eye chart. If you go through your study throughout the Gospels, and I encourage you to do this because for me it was a very beneficial study. But as you read through the Gospels, just mark and note all the times where Jesus says, don't say anything. Because that's exactly what he does here in Matthew chapter 12, beginning in verse 15. Now, back up in the context. In verse 9, he was there in the synagogue, and there was a man with a withered hand. And in verse 13, he tells the man, stretch out your hand. And the man stretched it out, and it was restored, healthy like the other. But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him how to destroy him. Now, we all understand, we know, that Jesus had many enemies. We know that the Pharisees hated Jesus. The Pharisees could not stand how many people were following Jesus. They couldn't stand that he claimed to be the Son of God. And so here they are conspiring on how to destroy him. And so Jesus knows that he has enemies. He knows that he's got to go away. He's got to retreat, so to speak. And so in verse 15, Jesus, aware of this, he withdrew from there. And many followed him, and he healed them all. So the multitude is coming after Jesus. Many people are following after Jesus, and he's healing them all. And in verse 16, he ordered them not to make him known. It's just amazing to me. Honestly, it's amazing to me that Jesus, the Son of God, who should, in my mind, have been calling out on the street corners, telling everyone, follow me. But what is he doing? See, don't say anything about this. You guys keep this quiet. And there were very specific reasons for that. There were very intentional reasons for that because, as we know, the Pharisees were after him. There was going to be a lot of trouble for Jesus if he made things more public than he was doing at this time. But there was also another reason why he did exactly what he's doing here. And that is what Matthew says in his gospel, Matthew chapter 12, verse 18, or in verse 17. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. So all the way back to Isaiah, Isaiah prophesied something about the very fact that Jesus is saying, don't say anything about this. He says in verse 18, behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved one, with whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles. Now that word proclaim there, that sounds very public, right? That sounds very visible and out there. But then there's a contrast that he gives. He will not quarrel or cry aloud, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not quench until he brings justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope. The prophecy about Jesus was that he was not going to stand on the street corner. His voice would not be heard in the streets. He was going to be quiet. He was going to be working behind the scenes. And you might go back to Matthew chapter 5 and you might say, well, Jesus, how are you being a light in the world? Well, he was being a light in the world, but he was doing it behind the scenes. He was working behind the scenes in order to teach those and heal those and proclaim the gospel to those who needed to hear it. But he wasn't making a public show about it. He wasn't making some grand exclamation that everyone should follow him. He wasn't standing on the street corner or standing on a mountain. Well, he did stand on the mountain, but he was not... Well, that was a bad one. He did, though, obviously, not do things for his own glory, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I think the lesson that we learn from the life of Jesus and the fact that he would tell people to be quiet about things is that you and I have all kinds of opportunities to work behind the scenes, don't we? And that seems really hypocritical as I'm literally standing here and all of you are quiet and watching me. There have been many opportunities throughout this service when our members have led singing or led our minds at the Lord's Supper or led us in prayer or read the Bible to us or taught our Bible classes and all these things. And I think that we hold up these areas of service, these acts of service, to a level that maybe we should not. Because over in the book of Romans, in chapter 12, Paul talks all about the ways that we work together in the church. And almost every single thing that he talks about us being able to do in the church there in Romans chapter 12, they're all behind-the-scenes things. Acts of mercy, generosity, exhortation, our giving, our encouragement for each other, all these things that we can do behind the scenes. And I want you to know that I know a lot of you work behind the scenes. And your name may never be said in this pulpit as being grateful for what you do. But I want you to know that I've seen at least a small glimpse into some of the things that you've done behind the scenes. Thank you. Thank you for your work. And I know you don't do those things behind the scenes so that you can receive a thank you. Jesus worked behind the scenes. He did things that were not visible by a lot of people. And I know you do things that are behind the scenes and not visible to a lot of people. We have opportunities to serve. We have opportunities to work together. And sometimes those opportunities don't look like public, out there, in front acts of service. And oh, by the way, they also are not constrained and limited to Sunday morning or Wednesday night. These areas and acts of service that we can do in the church to help build us up are things we should be doing throughout the week, even behind the scenes, as God has given us grace to be able to do those things. But as we move on here, Jesus, as our perfect example of the light in the world, he was not looking for numbers. He was not looking for multitudes. He was not looking for a large crowd. What Jesus was always looking for were the seekers. And let's look at Luke chapter 14 together. Luke in chapter 14, Luke records here in verse 25, "Now great crowds accompanied him, and he turned aside and said to them." Now, we'll pause right there for a second. Obviously, Jesus was very popular. In the reading that we had this morning from Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45, there were many people following Jesus, and he would tell that leper, "Hey, you don't say anything about me." And the leper just wouldn't listen. And he goes off and tells everybody, to the point where now Jesus couldn't even go into the city. He couldn't even go into largely populated areas. He had to teach people outside because there were so many people following him. And you might say Jesus was thinking, "Yes, I've gotten the multitudes." But no, Jesus didn't care about the multitudes. He didn't care about the number. He cared about something deeper than that. And that is why he goes on to say some very challenging things to them in Luke chapter 14, verse 26. If anyone comes after me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And then he talks about counting the cost there. He talks about making decisions about whether or not you really can pay what is required of you in discipleship. And then he goes on in verse 33. He says, "So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple." You know what Jesus is doing here? saying, I don't care about that number. I don't care about that number. I don't care about how many of you there are. I don't want a wide road full of many people who are comfortable. What I want is a narrow road full of committed people. I want people who have counted the cost. I want people who know what's at stake. And I want people who have committed themselves. I want people who have made the decision to leave everything else behind. Father, mother, wife, children, yes, and even yourself. Jesus is challenging them, saying, look, you cannot be my disciple just with a coupon. You can't be my disciple with a rebate code. You got to pay it all. You got to give me everything you have. And unless you give me everything you have, you're not my disciple at all. And so if Jesus was concerned about the numbers, if he was concerned about the multitudes, well, then he just alienated a whole lot of people, didn't he? But he wasn't. And he would do this many times throughout his ministry. Even in the case where he would tell them to eat his own flesh and drink his own blood, and they were like, what? And they left. Because that's preposterous, Jesus. He pushed them. And I think the takeaway for us today is, in our evangelism, do you push people? Not in a pushy way. Not in an abrasive way. I think a lot of times we invite people to come to service. Please come with me to worship. And please understand that I am not saying in any way that that is a bad thing. I love that. And I love to see people who have been invited, who come and who worship with us. But what I am saying is this. Do we ever move past the simple question of come to worship? And do we challenge people like Jesus challenged his disciples by saying, pay it all? Because it's not just enough to join the wide road. You've got to get on the narrow one, which leads to life. And we need to be encouraging and challenging each other in our evangelism to walk the narrow road. But in the way that we deal with each other, and the interactions that we have with each other. You know, it's mornings like these, and I knew it was going to happen. It's mornings like these where conversations of the weather just resound through the hallways. Oh, it's raining. Oh, it's cold. Oh, it's hot today. Oh. And I'm not saying that any of those conversations are bad. Oh, you look very nice today. Oh, look, brother so-and-so got a haircut. Good job. Those are wide road kinds of conversations. Those are conversations which you could have with anyone in the world. Are we going beyond the wide road kinds of conversations to the narrow road kinds of conversations which challenge each other? And sometimes when thinking about ways to let our light shine, sometimes that's, hey, brother, what have you been studying lately? Can I share what I've been studying with you? Hey, brother, how are your prayers going? Anybody that you're praying for really specifically right now? Here's who I've been praying for. Hey, brother, would you want to meet up and sit in a coffee shop and have a Bible study together? There are opportunities that we have to let our light shine in the lives of each other, to share with one another, to become connected with each other. And I honestly want to see that in 2019. I know our elders are going to have goals for 2019. I don't personally know what they are at this moment. But my goal personally, and I hope maybe your goal as well, is to look for opportunities to become more closely connected with each other on a deep spiritual level. And that takes thought, it takes time, it takes challenging one another, and it takes really listening sometimes to what needs to be said, and moving past the superficial sort of surface level, wide road kinds of conversations, and really getting into the meat of what it means to be a disciple, and what it means to let your light shine on this earth. Because we're not looking for numbers. We're not looking for the multitude. We're looking for the narrow road. And few there are who find it. Let's move on here and talk about the motive that Jesus had. Jesus was not motivated, again, by fame or popularity. He was not motivated by all of the kinds of notoriety that the Pharisees and the scribes and religious leaders wanted to have. He wasn't standing on the street corner. He wasn't trying to make some great physical earthly kingdom for himself in the way that many of the disciples even thought that he was. Jesus' heart, his service, was being done in a way that was not motivated by being seen. And that's what we see Jesus talk about in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, the whole point of what Jesus is really saying in Matthew chapter 6 really goes to the heart of the thing. It really goes to the motivation behind the thing. He offers them a warning. He says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven." The almost seeming paradox here between let your light shine and don't do things in front of people seems on the surface to be a really challenging thing to grasp. Then he talks about going on and giving to the needy. When you do your acts of charity, when you give to others, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. Jesus, and let me be very clear, is not saying that it is wrong for people to see your acts of charity. False. Because how many times in the life of Jesus did he practice charity? Did he give to others? Did he supply the needs of other people publicly in front of other people? What Jesus is not saying here is that it is wrong for you to be seen by others doing good things. What he's saying is, as if you're doing it so that people can see you doing those good things, you're doing it for the wrong reason. You have the wrong motive. Then he goes on and talks about prayer. Talks about prayer, going into your room and praying in secret so that your Father will bless you in secret. Not being the ones who shouted out on the street corner or love to pray in the presence of all of those around you. Jesus is not saying here that it is wrong for us to pray publicly, because he himself prayed publicly many times. The Apostle Paul prayed publicly many times. I've heard Matthew chapter 6 be used to say you should never offer a prayer in public before your meal. False. That's false. If you're offering your prayer in public before your meal so that people can see you, and that's the reason why you're doing it, then yes, it is wrong. And you need to change your attitude. You need to change your motive. You know, I also heard this when our elders would ask certain members or our membership here to report on their prayer goals. Please tell the elders how your prayer goals are going. And I've heard some people say, well, my prayers are between me and God. Are they? Are they really? Yes, first and foremost, you are communicating with God in your prayers. But go back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 14. You are a light in the world. And you can be a model of what it means to have a truly transformative prayer life to someone else by showing them and leading them and teaching them how to pray. You can be a model for showing somebody what acts of generosity and acts of mercy look like by showing them this is what it looks like to serve in these ways. And we'll talk about that in a second. But the motivation was never to be seen as the Pharisees were those hypocrites who stood on the street corner. And all they ever wanted to do in Matthew chapter 23, verses 5 through 12, all they ever wanted to do was receive praise from other people. And if that is your goal, to receive praise from other people, then you are doing it for the wrong reason. But we cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater here. And we cannot say, well, I never need to do anything in public ever so that I can fulfill Matthew chapter 6. Because you're throwing Matthew chapter 5, verse 14 right out with it. Your light's in the world. People should see your light. Why? So that God can be glorified. It's not about you. And quite frankly, it was not about Jesus either. And he said that many times. I'm not here to glorify myself. I'm not here so that everyone can love me and follow after me. Everything Jesus was doing was to glorify God first and foremost. And if he fulfilled that purpose, then anyone who saw him and anyone who saw the things that he was doing, then great. All the more. Let it come, because God was going to be glorified because of it. Jesus talks about the vine and the branches over in John chapter 15, verse 8. He says that Jesus was the vine and we are the branches, and he says that he wants us to bear fruit. Remember a couple of weeks ago when he talked about bearing fruit? how our fruit are visible, how our fruit are seen. And Jesus says there, if you bear good fruit, your Father will be glorified. It's not about how much that tree produces. It's not about how good that fruit tastes. It's not about the fruit itself. It's not about the tree itself. It's always about God at all times. Jesus was focused on glorifying God. And the question really for you is, do you let the practice of your faith, the outward and visible expression of your righteousness, bring glory to God? Whether in the world or whether among your brothers and sisters who are in Christ. Are you doing everything so that God can be glorified? Because if you are, then there's no need to hide. There's no need to be ashamed. You can practice your righteousness, and people can see that in a positive and productive way so that God will be glorified. And so then we move on to the model that Jesus leaves us. And I think of all of the thoughts that I have about this, of all the words that Jesus said, of all the teachings that he did, really, just looking at the life of Jesus and the way that he lived, the way that he interacted with people, the way that he served, the way that he loved, and all the things that he did, he leaves us the perfect example of what it means to be lights in the world. And he would tell his disciples to follow after him. Let's look at John chapter 13, verse 15. Jesus is preparing his disciples for his eventual departure, and he's there in the upper room as they're engaged in the Passover. And at the end of the meal, Jesus, in a very familiar situation here, gets on his knees, takes off his outer garment, and he washes the disciples' feet. He washes their feet. And each one of them have their feet washed, even the one who would betray him. And in verse 12, Jesus, when he had washed their feet, put on his outer garments, resumed his place, and he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I, then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do, just as I have done to you. Truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." What Jesus is saying here is, look at me. Look at me. You ever picture Jesus really saying that? Look at me. I think sometimes we take humility to such a far extent where Jesus would never tell anyone to look at him. Yeah, he says, look at me. Look at this. Look at what I've done. Look at how I've washed your feet. Now you do exactly like I did. Over in the book of Titus in chapter 2, we can see a very similar kind of language that Paul uses to the church there, to Titus and to the older Christians among them. Older men, older women, you should teach the younger men and the younger women. You should teach them, and you should show by your example, you should show from your experience what it really means to be the kind of people that you should be. In a sense, what Paul is saying is, older people, you need to tell the younger people, look at me. Look at me. Watch me. Not out of pride or not out of arrogance, but because you've been through it. Listen, I've gone through this before. And let me tell you, let me be a light in your life. Let me illuminate you with my experience. I have passed the test that you're going through. Let me tell you how I passed it. Or on the other side, and this might even be more challenging for us all today, I failed that test. And let me tell you how to do it better than I did. Older need to train the younger in a way that allows people to see what happened in your life. Early on in a marriage, I'll just tell you, we have no idea what we're doing. We don't. We're clueless. And if somebody who's been through it before can come in and say, you know what, I've been through this before, let me show you how it's done. Let me tell you what I did. Let me open up to you and become more connected with you and share with you what I've done. And then Paul goes on to Titus himself and says to Titus directly in Titus chapter 2, verse 7, show yourself a model of good works. He's telling Titus, show yourself. Let people see you. And I think we're really uncomfortable with that, aren't we? And that's the whole point, really, of this lesson. When you want to be a light in the world, you have to be willing to be seen. You have to be willing to show yourself. Why? So that other people can benefit from it, so that they can see what real service looks like, so they can see what a true child of God looks like. Paul would say many times, follow me. Not an arrogant kind of message, but follow me, because I'm following Christ. And in this upcoming year, I hope that we can all look for opportunities to become more connected with each other and show each other what service really, really looks like by showing each other what we've accomplished, what we've done, and even sometimes the mistakes that we've made. And that might mean, hey, I'm studying this right now. Hey, I've been praying about this lately. Hey, I'm going to go do this thing for somebody today. Would you come with me? Opening up to each other, connecting with each other in real and meaningful ways. And then Jesus says in John chapter 13 and verse 34, he says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also ought to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. What Jesus is saying there is, look at all of the ways that I have loved you. Look at all the care that I've had for you. Look at the way I took care of you. Look at the way I listened to you. Look at the way I spoke to you. Look at all the things that I have done for you. Look at all of these things. And you go do that for someone else. Use me as a model. And treat other people the way I've treated you, is what Jesus is saying. And then he says, when they see you doing that, when they see you loving in that way, they will know that you are my disciples. How can you be a model of love for someone else? Really, the question is, how can you be a model of love for someone else if you've hidden your light from others? If you spend more time behind the scenes in secret doing things that you don't share with people, open up. And let people see. Because Jesus told his disciples, look at me and do the same thing as I'm doing. So I hope these things have been an encouragement for you. I think about these things a lot because we can never connect with each other. We can never become a tight-knit group. We can never become bonded together if we don't open up. We can never become the kind of church that grows together if we're not honest with one another, if we're not open with one another, and if we're not willing to let people see what we're doing. And when we open up, when we let people see what we're doing, whether good or bad, not because we want the glory, not because we want the praise, we will bring God glory. Because as we grow and our fruits increase here in this place, it will by its very nature give God glory in all things. So I hope that you'll look for opportunities to let your light shine and not to hide it under a bushel. Please take out your songbooks and turn to the number that's been announced. I hope this morning that if you are ready to give your life to the Lord, that you've counted the cost, that you've considered what a life of true, dedicated service to the Lord really means. And if you want to know about people who have counted that cost, maybe talk to Zariah, maybe talk to Andrew, maybe talk to some of our young ones who have given their lives to the Lord recently. Talk to them and ask them the questions that they had and the things that they were thinking about before they decided to become a child of God. And I'm so proud of them. And I'm so proud of anyone who has given serious thought and consideration to these things. Please walk the narrow road and make the decision. If you're subject to the gospel call, please come as we stand and sing.